This is Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee.
Anytime you get to be behind the wheel of an Indy car at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, it's one you can't beat.
What can I say? This is a very special place, and for the first time, come out here and be going 220 some miles an hour. It's quite special. It's really something.
I spent a lot of time as a kid here, growing up. Coming out to practice days and things like that. So. It's special to be on track and be a part of it, and just excited to be back, and it's going to be a fun month.
It's a great feeling. It's a surreal feeling, especially when you grew up here. I was here pretty much right after birth, so it's cool to be back, cool to be just a part of the whole atmosphere again, and just have to do the best job we can do.
I think it's a really special place. It's so much history, and it's really special to be part of it. Now, we just have to get better and work really hard to achieve the ultimate thing, to win it.
I wasn't expecting to get up to speed that quickly, but we've got a good tow, and the car feels really good in traffic, so the lap time came with it. But I'm not too worried about it. We've got 2 weeks of testing, and May 24th is the day that counts the most, so we'll see.
It's always fun to come back to this place. Absolutely love it. My engineer and I were talking. It's like, even the not so good days, even the struggling days, is fun here.
It's pretty exciting. This place is amazing. I haven't been in an oval since Fontana, so you forget how quick these things go around. Pretty cool.
Oh, it's awesome. Every time that you come under that tunnel and you see the place where I think some of the best memories of my life have been. It's special no matter what. But now we're getting ready to turn the page in that book, and we have to go back out and try and win another one.
Welcome to the month of May, and the 99th running of the Indianapolis 500 is coming up later this month. It's Trackside, FM 107.5, 1070 The Fan, presented by Verizon. All right, let's play Name That Driver in our open you heard from after testing yesterday and the official opening day for practice for the 500. Last year's winner, Ryan Hunter-Reay, the only true rookie out there yesterday, Gabby Chavez, then Brian Clausen, Connor Daly, Simona DiSilvestro, Simon Pagenaud, Marco Andretti, Juan Pablo Montoya, and then from Ryan Hunter-Reay again, because he's the champ, so he gets to go first and last. Plenty to come up on the hour tonight. In fact, we begin our run of programs every weeknight in the month of May, so tomorrow night and through the rest of the week at 7 o'clock, and even better, after we're done at 8 o'clock tonight, Donald Davidson is here for the Talk of Gasoline Alley. You'll be able to ask Donald questions of a historical nature every weeknight at 8 p.m. As always, you can send us something to the Honda Twitter inbox, KevinLee23 on Twitter. We'll get to some of those coming up in just a little bit. And also later on in the show, in fact, at about 7:45, Graham Rahal will join us live. So look forward to that, talking about his impressive run to the finish at Barber Motorsports Park, where he picked up several spots in the later stages on a different strategy and good speed and finished second. We'll talk about that and also his run in practice yesterday on the oval at IMS. Free shakes. We're going to try to get some of those delivered to the studio as soon as possible from Steak and Shake, and much more coming up on the program. Let's talk about opening day. First off, Kurt, yesterday we saw a lot of activity and one of the more meaningful opening days we've had in recent years, with so much new and so much to be learned.
I think the first thing I thought was it was a good idea to move that test day, which has typically been in April if they had it. They haven't always had it, but they had that test day in April. They moved it into May, which gave a kind of a nice launching spot for the month of May and the race week at hand. So I thought that was a good decision. I'm not sure we learned a great deal. I think you can look at some of the sheets that factors out the draft, and you can start to see that Elio's obviously very good, and that the Hondas are at least in the ballpark. So, that's maybe the couple things we derived from the first weekend. But I think maybe ultimately the biggest thing we learned is that there are no issues with the aero kits. There are no No crash damage to deal with. And those who needed to get out and kind of shake the rust off, so to speak, got a chance to do so. There's a few drivers we didn't see, but largely there are no concerns at this point, which is a good sign.
I think we learned what we expected, that it's going to be faster this year. It's faster than what we saw on opening day last year, around 223, just over 223. And yesterday, 226.7. So if you want to do simple equation, last year's pole was 231. The fastest lap of the month last year was just over, just under 233, I think, on Saturday morning when it's always fast. Remember, we're talking extra horsepower coming up on Fast Friday and in the two qualifying days. So about 3 miles an hour quicker. Does that mean that we could see high 233s or around 234 for a pole speed?
Yeah, I think it does mean that if weather conditions are consistent and allowable, because there are some qualifying days where it just can't happen. Now, will we see those kind of speeds? Well, it's hard to tell because you know we don't know how much is left in the kits. I think as you start to see the Honda teams and the Chevy teams start to manage their cars differently, I think maybe that's kind of the biggest thing that impacts the speeds this year, other than the weather, of course, is that this year there are going to be more tools for the teams and the drivers to manage, where in the past they pretty well could change a few things, but Honda and Chevy are going to provide extra pieces or different pieces, and the teams will be able to experiment, and somebody's going to find a speed advantage and or at least make them quicker than they were with maybe another configuration. I hearken back to yesterday when I talked to Marco Andretti, and he said, you know, there's just an overwhelming amount of data we need to gather. We just don't know all the combinations, and then as the week goes on, the manufacturer is going to give them even more bits and pieces to try. So it's going to be a very challenging week next week, and I think it could really lead to some big speeds come qualifying day.
So that's one of the questions I had, and I think that's a good thing. So what you're saying is that you could get it right and really find something, or you might be able to get it wrong. So we should have a bigger disparity in speeds, which makes the racing better. You're going to have more overtaking if you have somebody that has it right and somebody that's struggling to find some speed.
Yeah, I don't think we'll see that much discrepancy in the qualifying, though, because as soon as a team comes in and does a nice job, there's going to be binoculars on that car to see what bits and pieces they have that if you're a team member, you'll look and say, what don't we have? So I think ultimately the fast guys will provide some guidance, even inadvertently, to other teams. So I think the cars will pretty much run the basic configuration similarly. But in a race, you're right, there's just not time to make those changes. And there's not the ability to focus in on what it is driver X, Y, or Z is doing to be as good as they are.
Our first chance to see the new Aero kits Thursday, the Honda was unveiled, and our first chance to talk about it on this show, our last show was last Tuesday. So we saw Honda on Thursday. We saw Chevy. Was that unveiled Saturday before the practice on Sunday?
They sent out the drawings, but
that's what it was. Okay, I knew I had seen them online. So what do we think? Talk about what you're seeing is the differences between Honda and Chevy, because just like on the road course, it's pretty easy to spot them.
It is easy. I think and this is my description, may not be the same as yours. My first take on them, the rear wings are so much smaller than I even expected.
Yeah.
The Chevy rear wing is basically looks like a piece of paper on the back end of the post. It's so thin. It doesn't have end plates. It's just a slice basically on the back of the wing. The Honda kit's a little more intricate, more creative looking, I suppose you'd say, with these what they're calling swan neck post, which is basically like maybe a candy cane shape that holds the rear wing in place. So that's a little unique. And as I said, the design is just more complicated, more intricate, use the word that you think best fits it. The other kind of interesting element, and Chevy had sent out a kind of an airflow type diagram that clearly showed how the air is traveling more around the front tires and then back in toward the rear tires or the rear wing. So the air on the Chevy is going to go out and then come back to the rear wing, which is the air is fed a little differently on the Honda. So there's enough differences there that make you make it easier to see. In fact, I might argue that while we were told that the Speedway kits would be more similar, I think it's easier to distinguish the two manufacturers in the Speedway configuration than there was in the road course configuration. I just think it's easier to see it at first glance. One of the things that's interesting about the two rear wings is that Chevy put its camera on the right side, end plate, basically, and it's kind of in the same location for the Honda, except it's inside the wing a little bit differently. That's the first and easiest way for me to identify which manufacturer is which.
You know, the one thing we're also very much interested, I think more so than what the cars look like, or at least I should say I am, and I think some are, is how are they going to race? That's been a real concern, is that the racing has been so entertaining, especially for the casual fan, the person that only watches the Indy 500. They want to see passing, and we've had it in record numbers the last couple of years. I'm hearing really positive things. I know we won't really know for a while, but what I'm hearing is so far so good that we think that this is going to deliver a similar style of racing. You hearing the same or any difference?
Well, I think what I've heard is very similar to what you've heard. The only thing I would take that a little bit of a grain of salt is that we've only kind of seen these in 2 and 3 car groups. Mm-hmm. Actually, if there's a little bit of a speed discrepancy, we might kind of enjoy it more. But by the same token, we need these cars to be stable in the draft, and you need drivers to have to be challenged, and hopefully we'll get that.
And I'm also going a little bit about what I was hearing at Barber last week from drivers, and in theory from what they thought of was going to happen, and from the comments I'm hearing and reading from yesterday, so far it seems like that's the case, that we're going to be able to see cars be able to get a run and draft and make the move, and it's not going to be too much dirty air upsetting for the trailing car. So something we'll learn, and we'll be watching more as the month goes along. We'll get into the speeds and what we make of that, and talk about the no-tow report and plenty more to come. At Kevin Lee 23 for the Honda Twitter inbox, it's Trackside, presented by Verizon on FM 107.5 and 1070 The Fan.
I'm Ryan Hunter Ray, and this is Trackside with Kurt Cavan and Kevin Lee on 1070 The Fan.
Don't forget to go to shophonda.com to enter Honda's fastest seat in sports sweepstakes to have your chance to lead the start of a Verizon IndyCar Series race in a two-seater driven by Mario Andretti. Go to shophonda.com for rules and to enter for a chance to win today. No purchase necessary. Ends 8/30/15. Someone will be in the back seat for the Angie's List Grand Prix of Indianapolis coming up this weekend, and more opportunities for you to win down the road at shophonda.com. All right, today we learned who the Grand Marshal is for the 99th running of the Indianapolis 500. And help me with the pronunciation here. Her name is Nastia Lukin.
I don't know how to pronounce it, actually, but you're very close.
Okay, Nastialiukin. Who is she and what does she do?
She's a gymnast, but that's not necessarily, she's an Olympic gymnast, or was. What she is known for at the moment is she's one of the contestants on Dancing with the Stars.
Yeah, I saw the headline, Olympic gymnast from 2008, gold medalist, and I'm, okay. And then the third paragraph, oh, now I see. She's on ABC's Dancing with the Stars. So.
And this is an ABC Indianapolis 500. What this also tells me is that currently there are about 6 or 7 candidates, participants, competitors, if you will, still on the program. They're still about six. They're still about 3 or 4 weeks from getting to the finals.
So they better rig it to make sure she's still in it by the end of the month, or she doesn't do anybody any good.
Well, I think if you went to Vegas right now and put odds on her being in the finals, you probably would win your money back and then some, because she's going to make the finals at this point, because finals would probably be closer to the end of the month, if not the first. Probably by the end of the month, they'll be down to the end of Dancing with the Stars. She is one of the best ones on the show. She is with Derek Huff, who's the best male dancer. I would think that that she might have a chance to win this thing.
We're breaking down Dancing with the Stars.
Well, I want to tell you who else is on the show here. Bruce Willis's daughter is on the show. She's very good as well. So
yeah, okay.
That's kind of where we stand.
Yeah, okay. Well, okay. It is what it is. She has 221,000 Twitter followers, so that matters. Although, you know what? That's kind of how we judge celebrities. I have learned that means nothing as well.
No,
because celebrities buy – you look at some of these people, and how do they have 1 million Twitter followers? They don't. They've bought them. It doesn't mean anything.
Here's what it does mean.
It may or may not mean something.
You can joke about the Dancing with the Stars link, and that's fair, but I can tell you it's consistently – a very strong platform to be on if you're the Indianapolis 500, because they're going to show her at Indy on a show that draws 20 million people. And I can assure you that in some form they'll have her in a two-seater ride, or they'll drive her around the racetrack, and they're going to get a couple 3 to 4 or 5 minutes of, maybe not quite that much, but you're going to get real airtime on a show that draws 20 million people. And that is worth something. By the way, the Grand Marshal is not really a big deal to those of us in Indianapolis. She's not waving the green flag. She's also not the pace car driver.
So we could have a different person waving. That's right. But that's the honorary starter.
That's the honorary starter.
So sometimes it is the Grand Marshal. Sometimes it's not. So
the Grand Marshal pretty much will handle the parade.
Yeah.
So this is not, I mean, laugh at it as you wish. But,
oh, I will, but I understand. I understand. You're looking for the best opportunity you can, and we don't know what the options were, so it's all fine. It's a big-time TV show that draws a lot of people.
Thank you. And as we move into your discussion about the pace car driver, one Jeff Gordon, I think that's a terrific choice, and I wrote that because I think he really does give you the chance to talk not only to NASCAR fans who are inherently interested in racing and to some degree the Indianapolis 500, but also you can go New York, you can go to LA markets, you can get him on shows because he's Jeff Gordon. He's mainstream enough that I think this was a solid choice.
I love the idea of Jeff Gordon driving the pace car. I wondered if some 500 diehards, IndyCar diehards, would be against it. What are you doing bringing in somebody from stock car? Are you hearing any negative reaction from anyone? Is that on the message boards, that kind of thing?
I don't read message boards. I can tell you that I probably received 100 emails about it on my Q&A, and I probably had 2 people say, this is a horrible choice. Most people get it. And I think they're respectful of Jeff because Jeff has been respectful of not only the Indy 500, but the city and the facility. And he's not just... And he never got his chance at the Indy 500 either. And yeah, he could have come this direction instead of NASCAR, but he's respectful of the place, and people appreciate that.
This covers both areas because we like it as racing people, and let's be honest, we like Jeff Gordon. I'm happy for Jeff Gordon to get this opportunity. He's not been to the Indy 500 since before he became a star.
In 1983.
Yeah. 1983 or 93?
83 was his last Indy 500.
So he was 12 years old the last time he was at the 500. So he's never been able to get any kind of special treatment and access at the 500. And I know that people that are close to him, he has said, I've been trying to figure out what I'm thinking about doing it and hopping on a plane with somebody else that's going back and forth. Well, now this makes it easier because he's in official capacity. So the travel will be organized for him, and he gets to experience that. The second part is that he still, as you said, will have a platform to promote the 500 and get some NASCAR people interested in it as well.
And when I bring up the idea that he's respectful, or the suggestion that he's respectful of the place, He's also respectful of the sport. When he was introduced as the pace car driver, one of the first things he said was, and this was unscripted, he said, "I took my son Leo to the race at Pocono, and now all he can talk about is IndyCars and how fast they are." Mm. So what a great promotion for IndyCar coming from a NASCAR driver.
Well, good to hear. We like that, and we'll get some more from Jeff Gordon, and maybe he shows, I don't know if he can come to anything else throughout the month. And I don't think you need to really do a lot of coaching with him. You know, they normally do some coaching with the pace car drivers. I think he'll pick this up pretty quickly.
Yeah, and you don't have to use him a lot at this market over the next few weeks. If he can get to a New York show or they can do some things with him on network television and so forth. But he doesn't really need to come here to promote the event, unlike some people.
All right, coming up in a moment, we'll check in with Graham Rahal, see what he feels about the Honda Aero kit that he tested for the first time yesterday, and talk about his great run at Barber from just over a week ago. It's Trackside, presented by Verizon, FM 107.5, 1070 The Fan.
This is Trackside with Kevin and Kevin on 1070 The Fan.
The month of May is upon us. That means we're here every night at 7 o'clock for Trackside, presented by Verizon. Donald Davidson up at 8 o'clock tonight and every weeknight, and some on weekends, too. Weekend programming and the schedule is still being developed. But we know coming up this weekend, we have a race, a Verizon IndyCar Series race at the world's greatest race course, the second Grand Prix of Indianapolis, with Angie's List as the title sponsor this year. That is coming up on Saturday, 3:30 on ABC. It airs here on FM 107.5 and 1070 The Fan, IndyCar Radio, the Verizon IndyCar 15 app, and more. Activity? No activity today at the track. None tomorrow, but actually there is action on Wednesday. That is closed to the public. I would presume, though, that you can go and sit on the mound or the little bleachers by the museum. It's Mazda Road to Indy testing, so USF 2000. And Pro Mazda and Indy Lights coming up on Wednesday, a full day there of a closed test. And then Thursday is when the IndyCar activity gets going, plus more of the Mazda Road to Indy. And that's free. That's free coming up on Thursday. Friday, I read this on Trackside Online, that the garages are open free.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so if anybody knows differently, let me know. That's probably something. The word should be spread a little bit more on that, and we'll get that type of information when Doug Bowles, IMS president, joins us coming up on Wednesday night's show. And then I did hear something about this as well. Friday, by the way, is there's some races as well. All of the Mazda Road to Indy levels will race and will qualify for IndyCar. Saturday, more races, including the IndyCar race at 3:30, and fans can go on the track after the race for what's called a track invasion. So a different type of opportunity. Yesterday, they had the pit lane open right around noon, which I thought was very cool as well. So I think the Speedway is trying to do as much as they can to be as inclusive as they can to fans, and so far, so good.
I think so, too. It's this road course race really opens up the Speedway to some new opportunities. The scheduling is different. There are some more cars on track that you don't normally see during an Indy 500 weekend. And I think it just, as a general statement, it really does force them, if you will, to look at how they present their product in a different way. And because the road race is just different than the oval. So these are all good things for the fans.
Next Sunday, the track will be closed again. So I want to keep reminding people of that. We talked about last week that this Sunday was opening day, and Indy Fred 98 said, I guess that's why IMS has been calling it opening day for weeks on their website, as in a duh. But the problem is, not everyone goes to the website for IMS. And as I talked to people throughout the weekend, a lot of people were surprised. As I'm at the go-kart track on Saturday and then Sunday afternoon, and people asking me why I was here late. I was at the track for opening day. Really? So these are racing people. These are people who want their kids to be IndyCar drivers, did not know that it was opening day. So that's part of the challenge, is getting the word out. And there is no one way to get things out anymore. It used to be, back in the day, most everyone read the newspaper. Most everyone watched either the 6 or the 11 o'clock news. Everyone gets their information in a different way now.
Well, that's absolutely true. And then the other thing is they have changed their format several times in the last 15 years.
True.
And so, you know, you get used to something and then they change it. So you can't build a habit the way, you know, the way this functioned in years past when, for example, the track opened May 1st and you knew that's why people, older people, when they say it's May, it's time for the track, because May 1 was when the track opened, mm-hmm. and track was open for practice May 1 starting at, I believe, 10 a.m. and it rolled until the race weekend. So it's different times, and one of the challenges is explaining that schedule to people. And truthfully, I've had to look at the schedule several times, or I wait to talk to you and listen to you explain it to people on this show so that I know kind of how to proceed. I mean, I know the general timelines, but some of the gate openings and so forth, I get straight from listening to you.
And to be honest, I'm going to need a refresher on how qualifying works. If you ask me for the 500, which we don't have to deal with this weekend, but for next week's show, we'll explain how qualifying works over the 2 days because it's a little bit challenging. So we'll get into that and deal with that at another time. As far as yesterday is concerned and the track opening, going into it, and now in hindsight, I like that idea. For one, I like the idea that we did a day, everybody gets a little bit of a time to breathe, we do something else, and then you come back. I like the idea that they're not going to have to turn around the cars in 10 hours to go from Saturday to Sunday. It's just not worth it. Talking about next weekend, if, say, 30,000 people were coming out on opening day, then maybe it is worth it to make the crew guys stay out all night and the track workers go around, but it's just not enough people for that. So I think I like this idea to continue it in future years. However, I didn't walk around a lot yesterday. I was only out there till 2 o'clock and then scooted out, and I was just sitting on the PA stand. What was the atmosphere like yesterday? Was it successful?
Well, I can't judge the Speedway success level because you don't know cost versus take, you know, how much money they made or lost or what, how the financial picture broke. But I can tell you this, on Monday morning on May the 4th, which is today, they had basically three pages in the Indianapolis Star. They had all the television stations and radio stations were at the track yesterday broadcasting about the race that's coming up. Mm-hmm. So on May 4th and May 3rd, because it was in Sunday's newspaper as well, they have people talking about activities at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and that ultimately is why the changes were made, so they could start the month earlier. You know, a few years ago, well, just 2 years ago, when the track was opening up May 10th, I mean, you were 2 weeks from the start of the Indy 500. At least you've picked up an extra week of promotion. Look, I mean, to go out there and test these cars, we're in an era where they don't need to test these cars anymore. They know they could go out truthfully and run Thursday, qualify Friday, race Sunday. They could, because they do it at tracks all over the country.
They may not get the optimum speed. Maybe there's a little bit left on the table, but you're right. It's all the same level. They could do it.
They could do it. This is mostly a function of building up the interest in the event. So from a success standpoint, that was your question. I think it was successful because they were able to generate publicity, get people talking and thinking about the activities at Indianapolis Motor Speedway, and they got them talking about it sooner. Now, I thought from a crowd standpoint, it was probably what you'd see on Mother's Day. You know, Mother's Day is always a challenging day. I know the Speedway was a little bit surprised by how big the crowd turnout was because the line at the one concession stand that was open was long all day. They had not planned for that many people, so they probably should have had a couple or three concession stands open.
As far as speeds, Juan Pablo Montoya was fastest at 226.772 miles an hour. And then another Chevy, his teammate, Elio Castroneves. Then Marco Andretti, a Honda. Then a Chevy of Scott Dixon. A Chevy of Simon Pagenaud. A Honda of Takuma Sato. Then a Honda of Simone DiSilvestro. Ed Carpenter, Ryan Hunter-Reay, Sage Karam. Now, the no-tow report. And I had a question from S2000 Moose. Why isn't IndyCar distributing the no-tow times to fans now that they are keeping track of them? The monitor that I had at the PA stand actually has it on there. The far right-hand column shows the no-toe report, meaning the true speed, meaning that they didn't have a car in front of them to help pull them along, and then it had the rank. But I'm not seeing those publicly disseminated yet. I know Dave First was out there in the PA stand, and he tweeted this out. Elio was fastest there, 224.413, then Hunter Ray, 223.7, then Chavez, Servia, Power, and Sato.
Now, I would also say, and let's explain a little bit how that works, there's a computer program that factors out every lap where there's a car within, I believe it's 7 seconds ahead of them in track distance. So if there's a car on the front straightaway and you're on the front straightaway, that lap time of yours will be essentially thrown out. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean you have the fastest cars on the no-toe report. That only means of the laps that were available to them. In other words, if I'm Juan Pablo Montoya and all 60 of my laps on the track yesterday were with somebody within 7 seconds of me,
correct,
then I don't have a time.
Yeah.
So that doesn't mean that Montoya doesn't have one of the fastest cars. It just means he didn't have a lap, or one of his better laps at least.
It just tells us what someone can do by themselves in qualifying.
That's correct. And so it is a helpful tool. I noticed that Bobby Rahal sent out a tweet this morning that basically instructed in a nice way of, I'm being a little sarcastic there, for everyone to disregard all laps that were with the draft. And my answer to that is you can't. I mean, you shouldn't, because you're also learning something about what the car can do in traffic.
That applies to the race.
That's an important race statistic. Now, it's not necessarily a good indicator of how a car is going to qualify, but from a racing standpoint, that is an important number. In fact, it might be the most important number. But his point is well taken. If you're trying to discern which car's got the best chance for the pole, look at the no-toe report if you have access to it. I didn't have one in my hand yesterday to report the information, but I knew from looking at the from talking to people, the same two or three people were at the top of the list. Elio was squarely number one.
Much more, and Graham Rahal coming up in a few minutes. Trackside, FM 107.5, 1070, The Fan.
And he's going to do it again! Rahal is doing it again to Elio Castroneves, but Elio fights back. Wheel to wheel, Rahal does it again.
Graham Rahal is showing the field. This is how you pass at Barber. That is for a podium finish, and boy, that would be a huge boost to this team, who's had a great start to the season relative to previous years.
I've got to say it, Steve. I know you'll say it. Townsend, you will. Marty, everybody, Kev. Anyone who knows Graham Rahal. We've been waiting for this Graham Rahal for some time. And now,
wow! Here he comes! Get after him, son! Get after him!
Another second that lap. It's down to 11 point. It's down to 10.6, make it.
Don't let him get away. Do not let him get away now. Keep the pressure on. Corner after corner after corner. You know this track. You can do this, son. Here it is!
Whoa.
Here it is, Graham! It's yours if you want it!
Wow, was fantastic. We thought that his only move was turn five, but he just showed us he's got another trick in his bag.
But look at the gap within about 2 seconds. Look at the gap he's made.
Meanwhile, final two turns. We've got two young American stars in the top two positions. The wait is over. Joseph Newgarden is an IndyCar race winner. He takes out.
Nice job. Great job.
His home race. How about
Whoa,
that at Barber Motorsports Park? Superb!
Thanks for staying with us on Trackside on FM 107.5, 1070 The Fan. From NBCSN, the exciting finish to the race at Barber Motorsports Park a week and a half ago. And Graham Rahal joins us now, the driver of the number 15 Steak and Shake car for Rahal Letterman Lanigan Racing. I'm going to guess you enjoyed that. Had you seen the broadcast yet and heard Matchett screaming about you?
Yeah, well, I did. I did see some of it. And actually, we had a Steak and Shake convention the other day, and they put together a little movie you know, a little video highlight reel of the race. And so I heard some of it, but I haven't seen the whole thing. And, you know, I wish I would have been able to clear him a little earlier. I didn't realize that when I cleared Elio, I think it was 7 or 8 laps to go. I was still 19 seconds behind Newgarden. That's a lot. You know, yeah. I don't know. I probably never thought it'd be possible before to make up, you know, 18 of those 19 and only 7 laps. But pretty cool. You know, I think we put on a good show for the fans and had some fun. And, you know, I think we proved that this team can run up front, should run up front, and will run up front. And so, you know, looking forward to the GP this weekend, I can tell you that.
We told Steve Matchett before the race he has to give us a come on, son, at some point, so we're glad you were able to deliver. That was one of the more impressive runs in a few laps that we've seen in a long, long time. What is that feeling like when you're just picking off cars at a place that's supposedly difficult to pass?
Well, you know, I think Barber actually always puts on a pretty good race, but I definitely think, you know, I try to be very calculated in all my passes and try to do my best to fake guys out, you know, and make them make the first mistake or the first move. And once I got them to make the first move, I knew I could get them. Like Elio, for instance, I faked to the left. And so he blocked me left hard. And then I just went around the outside. So I knew that if I could get them to kind of not make a mistake, but kind of react to me, then I'd have an open door. And so it worked pretty well. And, yeah, it was a lot of fun. There's not too many days that you get to race with Dixon and Elio and Power and Hunter Ray and, you know, all these guys that are really the big teams with big names of the sport, you know, and some of the most accomplished guys. And so it's pretty cool to be able to race wheel-to-wheel with them.
This was by far the best result of the season, but you've been strong in all 4 races, and the results have not been bad. You had the penalty in the first race, I think, what, 11th, 8th, 11th, and 2nd. But I would say, as an outsider, your pace and your racing has been better than that. How good do you feel about where your team is right now?
Well, I feel extremely good about my team, and I'm very proud of them. You know, and I know I said that, you know, before, but you know, these guys have worked very hard. And I think, as you said, you know, had we not had a penalty at St. Pete, we'd have had a similar result, I think. There's no doubt that on that given day, we were probably one of the strongest cars, too. And we were able to charge up through the field pretty good. And, you know, Long Beach is really the one race where we just weren't good. We qualified okay, but race day, we just weren't there. NOLA, we got up into the top 4. It was at one point, it was 3 Penske's, then me, you know. And I think that's a sign of where we are. I really do think from a road course perspective, the ovals we're going to find out here shortly, but from a road course perspective, I think that this Steak and Shake team is one of the best right now. And, you know, that's why I say the GP, you know, we're riding a bit of a high here, obviously coming off of Barber, but I think, you know, we can have a good run of this thing, and we're not that far out of, like, I think it's like 9 points out of 4th in the championship, if I'm not mistaken. And so, you know, as I told my guys, you know, we just can't have an off weekend because we're in the hunt. You know, we're right there. And, you know, I'm looking forward to getting out there this weekend.
Now, you mentioned Steak and Shake, and the boss handed out free shakes to everyone that was in his show in the theater last Monday night. When can we expect shakes delivered in the media center, the studio, the PA stand, something of that nature?
Well, you know, we win this weekend, I'll make that happen for you. So you can mark my word. But,
all right, we'll look forward to that.
You know, I think it was very cool what Dave's done. And, you know, I wish Dave's time wasn't coming to an end for many reasons.
Yeah.
But obviously the power that he has, you know, on things like that very thing is not something you could buy. And I can tell you this, because I've been on the Letterman show a couple times before. Typically, you're not allowed to even wear a sponsor logo, you know, when you go on there. They're very picky about what you wear and, you know, not promoting companies. And for Dave to do something like that, not only shows, obviously they sponsor the team, but we've had a lot of sponsors on this team. But I think what it really shows is his passion for Steak and Shake. You know, being a an indie boy.
Yeah.
You know, growing up, spending so many nights at Steak and Shake, he it's pretty clear that he has a love for it, and he was pretty proud to show it.
Will we see more of him after the show ends in a couple of weeks at the racetrack?
You know, I hope. And I talked to Dave about that very thing, and you know, kind of asked him what his plans were, and I think he'd like that for sure. I think everybody knows that Dave is a diehard IndyCar fan. But, you know, there's family and there's other things, too. And he's worked so hard all his life. I'm pretty sure there's probably a lot of other things on his mind. But
yeah,
for sure, I think we will see him more. It's just how much.
I saw in Kurt's story that was in the Star this morning, very nice story. People should look at it, IndyStar.com, if they've not seen it. He said he really wants to introduce his son to the sport as well and share that passion. So that sounds good to us. We look forward to seeing him.
I think that's the biggest thing. His son, Harry, you know, it's going to be important for Dave to spend time with him, you know. And ultimately, you know, I think I've heard the quote many times before, and I think it's true, you know, that your greatest success in life isn't what you accomplish on a business level, but you know, your family. And I think that's probably starting to hit home for Dave, you know, being he's been gone so much of his life, and I think Harry's only 11 or something. And you know, so there's a lot of life, a lot of growing for him to do, and I'm sure that's important for Dave.
Yesterday, your first chance in the new Honda Aero kit. What did you think? What are you expecting? What still needs to be tweaked on that in what little time you've had in it?
Well, I think all in all, it was pretty good. You know, it didn't do anything, quote unquote, evil. What I mean by that is, you know, when you develop a new car like this, it's hard to ever just bring it out of the box and it run pretty well. And I think it ran well for us. Were we, you know, the quickest car out there? Absolutely not. In fact, I think we were towards the bottom of the timesheets, but really our objective yesterday was to mileage out the engine. I think we're the first Honda we have, because I think we've completed every race lap this year, which is only a few of us that have done that. But we have mileaged. I think we're the first people to get to the mileage mark. And so that was our main objective, was we had to do like 55 laps just to get the engine out. And then, you know, we stayed full downforce, heavy loaded downforce all day. And I think a few people trimmed out pretty good from what I saw. So I don't feel too bad about it. You know, I think the kit's going to be pretty quick. It's pretty apparent already that the Honda versus the Chevy's going to be pretty tight. You know, we'll just have to see how it all plays out, see which one qualifies better, see which one races better. There's a lot of questions there that probably won't be answered until we get back on the oval and start doing some qual sims and stuff at the end of next week.
One of the features of our program and one of the supporters, the reason we get to do this is because of Honda and Honda's fastest seat in sports sweepstakes. It is that time in the program where I mention one of those. So I'm going to include you. I often joke that if someone says hi to Kurt and Kevin, 1070 The Fan, that we'll give them something extra. So we're going to include you. They need to say hello to Graham. You know, the interviews that Diffie does with the winner in the backseat with Mario. So what can we give someone that wins Honda's fastest seat in sports? A quick meet and greet, a chance at a race to come by and say hello to you? Is that workable for you?
That's workable. We can do that for sure.
So we include that.
I do a lot of stuff on Twitter. We do a lot of fan giveaways and stuff, too.
Yeah.
And we had some people down to Barber and did a little private Q&A before the race. And I don't know. I'm thinking that might be my good luck charm, so let's do it.
All right, so they need to say hello to Graham, Kurt, and Kevin. So we're really adding on to the list, and the NBC producers are probably not going to be happy with me if this actually happens. But we'll give it a go. Go to shophonda.com for rules and to enter for a chance to win today. No purchase necessary. Ends 8:30:15. Graham Rahal, the driver of the number 15 Steak and Shake Honda for Rahal, Letterman, Lanigan Racing. First of all, great luck this weekend in the GP, and then get ready to go at it again for the greatest spectacle in racing next Monday. Thanks, Graham.
Sounds good. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Graham Rahal, kind enough to join us tonight. We have had a special guest in the studio who so far has been silent. We've had Jackson Lee on the show many times. Let's welcome Savannah Lee to the program, fresh from track practice tonight. So she is accompanying Dad to work today. Savannah, who's your favorite driver?
James Hinchcliffe.
Yeah? Why?
Well, because he's just funny. He's like a funny guy.
Have you met James Hinchcliffe?
Yes, I have.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What color's his car?
It's black, and he's the number 5.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for coming into the show tonight.
Thank you.
All right. You're gonna stay, and you're going to screen calls for Donald coming up next, right?
Yep.
So Savannah will determine whether you're able to get on the air, because the talk of gas in that gasoline alley, the season debut edition, is coming up next. Call in now. You know Dave and Marion is already on hold. Mike and Vernon Hills as well. Jump on board. 317-239-1070. Thanks to Graham for joining us. We ran out of time, and I have a lot more to talk about. Luckily, we have Trackside again tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. So join me and Kurt then tomorrow night at 7. Thanks to David Deering. He helped out significantly with the show. Casey Vallier is our studio producer tonight. I'm Kevin Lee. Donald is up next on 1070 The Fan.